Today's Formula One stars were all born to race, but without careful nurturing from a young age, their raw speed and ability would have remained nothing but potential. Cue Gwen LeGru, the F1 talent guru, responsible for polishing these hidden gems into refined jewels.
Take a bow, George Russell, finally a Grand Prix winner and the 113th driver to do so.
This is just the beginning.
And Esteban Ocon wins the Hungarian Grand Prix for his first ever win in Formula One. Yeah!
Woo! Grand Prix winners George Russell and Esteban Ocon both have Gwen LeGru to thank for their place on the F1 grid. And as the man in charge of the Mercedes Young Driver Programme, Gwen scouts talented racers, recruits them, takes them under his wing and fine-tunes them until they shine at the pinnacle of motorsport.
We meet very rarely the one who will become world champion. That, I think, happens every 10, 12 years, eventually. But I don't think the last 15 years we missed someone exceptional. I think all the exceptional drivers are actually in Formula One.
Hello and welcome to F1 Beyond the Grid with me, Tom Clarkson. Gwen LeGru grew up wanting to be a racer, but after 13 years in karting and rally, he realised his career was better devoted to helping others achieve their motorsport dreams. That path has taken the Frenchman to Mercedes, where he's in charge of the team's Young Driver programme. Focusing his search for the next F1 stars in karting, he watched the likes of George Russell, Max Verstappen, Charles Leclerc, Alex Albon and Esteban Ocon all competing for titles across Europe in their adolescent years. Russell, Ocon and Albon became Gwen's protégés and he's facilitated their transformation into world-class Formula One drivers today. He clearly knows talent when he sees it. Now LeGru is looking for the next generation of F1 superstars. He tells me what qualities he wants to see in a young driver and why speed isn't the only attribute that counts. He talks about how often he encounters a potential world champion, what challenges F1 rookies face today, some of the youngsters currently on his books that we should look out for, and much, much more. And we have another treat for you at the end of our chat, because I also gauge the thoughts of Mercedes team principal Toto Wolff on their recruitment of young drivers and whether Verstappen could have joined the three-pointed star earlier in his career. It's all a really fascinating insight into how F1 stars are discovered. I hope you enjoy our conversation. Gwen, before we get on to the current crop of young drivers for Mercedes, how many on the current Formula One grid have been through the Gwen LeGru boot camp, if you like?
So I had the privilege to work with Esteban Ocon, George Russell and Alex Albon.
Well, can we talk about each of those guys? Why not start with George Russell? When did he first come onto your radar?
The first time I met George was in a PFI, international go-kart track. It was in 2010, if I remember right, and it was for a European event, a European go-kart event, and that's when we really... I knew him before because I was following the go-kart season, but that's the first time we properly met and start to discuss and have a proper discussion about what he was doing, who is he, etc., etc. So, and I quite like the first discussion we had.
And what impressed you about him in terms of what he was doing on track?
He was extremely confident in himself, and I think that didn't change really. He was extremely determined. But you could feel already at that time he was different.
There's a great story that he approached Toto Wolff at an award ceremony, but this was before all that.
I think it was probably about the same period of time. But at that time, I was working at Lotus F1 team. I think he approached Toto a little bit later than this. We have to ask him. I don't remember.
So you were actually thinking of him as a Lotus young driver back then, not a Mercedes driver?
Yeah, absolutely. I had the privilege to witness a fantastic generation at that time, because every weekend I was watching Max Verstappen, Charles Leclerc, Pierre Gasly, George Russell, Esteban Ocon. They were all racing together. It was an absolutely unique period of time in go-kart. Such a generation fighting in front of me. Anyone could pick a young superstar at that time.
And then, of course, George wins the Brazilian Grand Prix last year. We'll come on to how you help young drivers in a minute, but how did you feel after he won in Brazil?
Well, of course, it's always a special moment. And when he won the last laps, I was just remembering the difficult times we had to face in F2 and also at Williams during 3 years. And see him winning is the reason why I'm here with the team and why I'm helping drivers. That's the first step of a concrete achievement in Formula One. And I hope he will have many more. And of course, the next step will be to win a championship.
And you felt like you were a small cog in the wheel that created the George Russell we know today.
I think I was just one part of the system. You know, we are a number of people around the drivers to deliver a job, and I'm just one part of the chain. It's a teamwork, technically, teamwork. So you have Aleš, his coach, Harry and Gary, who are supporting and helping him since day one also. Me, Toto, and the entire team.
You say that you've worked with Ocon as well. When did you first meet Esteban, and did you see the same qualities in him that you saw in George?
So Esteban was actually the first I signed and picked in go-kart, and that was end of 2009. Each of them are completely different, and that's why it requires a specific way of work with each of them. It's a handmade work. And Esteban was very mature for his age. He was also, I think, 12 or 11 years old when I met him first time. And you can see he was his hunger to drive, to win. He was also very apart, very determined as well. Obviously, he was coming from an environment. They had absolutely no money to race. He was racing with used and dead tires and stuff like this, and he was still doing a really good job. So when we met, our help was crucial, because without our support and our financial backing, he was about to stop his go-kart career.
And how does it feel now that Esteban is racing for a rival?
Well, he's still under a management contract, so we are still managing his career, and we have agreed with Alpine to lend him. So we are still very connected to Esteban, so we are still following everything and helping and supporting him, even though if he's racing for a competitor. But he's still, in a way, part of the family.
And I guess there's nothing quite like your first child, right? So if Esteban was number one, how did you feel when he won in Hungary a couple of years ago?
Well, about the same, I have to say. It's for me, it's more, I'm more depressed when we lose or when we have bad times than when we win. We are doing all that at the end of the day to win. So winning is just a normal achievement, I would say. But when we lose a championship in a junior series, or when we lose a good opportunity, I'm more affected than happy when we are winning, because that's what we have to do.
Now, it might come as a surprise that you work with Alex Albon, because so many people associate his junior career with Red Bull.
Yeah, well, actually, Alex was also racing with this absolutely famous generation of young drivers with Max, etc. And he was really, really good. He won European and World Championship at that time. And in end of 2012, the young driver program he was with has decided to stop their collaboration. So I signed him at Lotus because I knew him since go-kart. And actually, I have helped him and I have supported him till he signed again with the same young driver program who decided to stop their journey at that time. So yeah, I know him really well, and we did Formula Renault, F3, GP3, and F2 with Alex. Yeah, and I was really helping him as a friend and without any interest, because with a total support and agreement of Toto and Mercedes. He did also some simulator for us at Mercedes, and we also released him to make him sign when he had the opportunity.
So those are the current guys you're working with. Now, how often do drivers of Formula One caliber come along?
It is a good question. I think we meet very rarely the one who will become world champion. That, I think, happen every 10, 12 years, eventually. But drivers able to come in Formula One, I think, I believe in each driver I have. And when I sign them in go-kart, I believe we will make it happen. So, you need to believe about what you are doing. And the target is to bring them in Formula One. And if you are not able to reach this target, I will do everything I can to help this driver to become professional. But we know, of course, you cannot bring them all to Formula One, but it has to be a target. And if we are not able to achieve that target, I know that they will become professional anyway, in endurance, in IndyCar, or whatever.
What do you look for in a 10-year-old, a 12-year-old? Is it all about speed in those karting days?
No, absolutely not. Because, of course, it's part of what we are looking for. But when I'm going on a go-kart race, I'm following, let's say, the top 10 drivers, or some drivers into the top 10 or top 15. And then I'm monitoring during an entire season what they are doing and whatever are the conditions, wet or dry, or if it's super hot or cold. And I'm more focused on how consistent they are, how they are interacting with their team, with their mechanic, how they will manage the race. And if I take, for example, Kimi Antonelli, who is one of our young drivers, the way at 11 years old he was able to read the race, how he was defending, how he was attacking. He was not always the most competitive one in Mini, but he was always there, always in the top five, wet, dry, wind, whatever you want. He was always, always there. And he was extremely clever for such a young age. I have never seen anyone as clever as this kid at this age.
And has he continued to impress you as he's gone up the ladder into single-seaters?
Yes, definitely.
Is a talented driver at the age of 10, at the age of 12, harder to spot than, say, a footballer?
Yeah, I think it requires... Well, the problem is you are depending also on the material you are having in your hands. So when you are super talented, I think in tennis or football, you don't have to rely on too much on the material you are using. When in go-karts, actually, it is the case. Even in Mini, I mean, if you don't have the right package, it's difficult to show up. But when you have someone really special, you can still see he is by the way he's defending, attacking, even if he's not winning. If he starts P20 and end up P5, P6, something like this, it's still something I will notice.
I guess Ocon was a classic example of that. You say he was using old tyres because he couldn't afford new ones, and yet you could still spot him.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. He's a perfect example, actually, because he wasn't not often in a position to win, and he was still ending up on the podium or sometime winning races.
Where do you begin your search for the next Lewis Hamilton, George Russell? Does it have to be go-karts? Do you feel that if you haven't been karting as a driver, you're missing out and it's too late?
It's not necessarily too late, but it makes everything much easier when you start as early as possible. And I really like when we start a project in go-kart, because you are building a trust with a driver and with a family, which will be way more difficult if you start later on.
There are so many kart drivers all over the world, almost in every country. How do you keep on top of who's coming through? Do you have talent scouts all over the world reporting into you?
Yes, we have, a strong network. But I'm not convinced we are always picking the most talented one in the world. And I think we are actually working on how we can make the sport more accessible, because maybe the most talented kid is somewhere in South America and we don't know who is he, because he is not able to afford coming in Europe and racing on the races we are monitoring and scouting talents. So there is a lot of initiatives actually to try to open the access to go-kart to a maximum of young drivers.
Gwen, can you tell me a little bit more about that? So what, in South America, you're offering people a chance to come karting for the first time?
Yes, we are trying to support through organizers, through constructors, manufacturers. We are trying to help and support them. For example, to provide a go-kart to a young driver or to a team somewhere in the world. And we are pushing a lot and helping some organizers, ASN, to make the sport accessible. I think it is a key for young kids.
Do you think you and Mercedes are the only people doing that? Because there are a lot of young driver programs now, aren't there? McLaren have just relaunched theirs, Alpine have one, Red Bull have one.
I think everyone here in the paddock understood the importance of having talented drivers and how difficult it is to find the new Lewis Hamilton or the new world champion. And we have all to make effort to support young drivers. But we also have, I think, to support all initiatives which can make the sport more accessible. International go-kart season is 250,000-300,000 euros. So you can understand that how difficult it is to find the budget to be able to race at this level in go-kart.
So you've spotted a driver with potential. I'm sure that driver has been spotted by other people as well. What happens next for you to be able to look at them in more detail and potentially sign them up?
I think we are not a lot, or maybe I am one of the only one to go and to watch really at the early stage in Mini, between 8 and 10 years old. And of course, it's always a bet or a risk when you sign a young driver at 11 years old, because you don't know if he will develop or if he will, let's say, tick all the boxes in the future. But until now, we haven't done too many mistakes. And what we have noticed on the early days, their skills were, we have improved the skills, and we have just correct what was already not right. And we are not a lot, I think, to do that such an early stage.
So you're looking for consistency, but what else? Do you give them fitness tests? Do you give them cognitive tests?
Well, when they are 11 years old, you know, they are still growing up. So, of course, we are giving them an initial introduction with a physical coach or mental coach, but it's very, very light because they are still growing up, and the most important at this age is to enjoy what they are doing, to have fun, and to let them race and let express their natural talent and skills. But more we go, we will add tools around them. So when they are 11 years old in go-kart, we let everything going very simple, you know. And the moment we switch them to single-seater, which is a key moment in a driver career when you switch from go-kart to single-seater. Then we start to add a physical coach, and then we have someone with a young driver to guide him how to interact with the team, how to interact with your engineer, how you will prepare your report, etc., what is important. So everything. So more we go and more we had tools around the driver.
And of course, you're helping them financially as well with the budget.
Yes, absolutely. That's part of the support, yeah.
And what about education? Because these guys and girls are spending so much time at racetracks, and then, of course, they have to test midweek as well. So they're missing a lot of school. How do you help them with that?
That is a very good question, and that's something we caring about. So school results are part of what we are monitoring, and it is super important, because when we sign a driver, we take the responsibility of not only a sport project, but a life project. And if you are not reaching the top level, or if you are not becoming professional driver, you still have to work. So school is super, and education is super important, and it's something we're supporting a lot. Of course, in go-kart, they are spending, I don't know, 250 days on track. It's absolutely crazy. They are non-stop driving from mid-January to mid-December. So we need to adapt the school program to each driver, and we are communicating with the family to make sure that everything is organized perfectly with the school.
So when you're doing 250 days driving, I can see it's an incredible racing education. Do you allow them to do other sports as well, just to give them a more rounded view?
Yes, definitely. And it's not easy when you are committed into a go-kart and into racing, but you can easily see that all the kids are playing football or playing tennis, and it has to be part of their physical education and development. So a lot of them are actually having another sport, but more as a fun than a really professional development or approach.
Can we develop the idea of what you're looking for in a young driver? What are the telltale signs that they are a future champion? Okay, they're quick and consistent, but if a young driver was sitting the other side of the table like I am to you now, what would impress you in terms of how they talk, how they act, how they interact with you?
Yeah, most of the time what I have noticed with if I think about George or Esteban or Alex or Kimi today, you can immediately feel at 12 years old, they already discuss with you as they are 20 years old. So the maturity they have at their age is super impressive. And you can feel that you are already talking to someone apart, someone special, someone different. The way they are quickly thinking and answering to a question, or even anticipating what you will ask them, etc. They are pretty impressive for a 12-year-old kid.
And what do you do about the parents? Because racing parents don't have a great reputation, do they? I get it because many of them are investing huge sums of money and taking a great risk on their child's career. But how do you keep the parents just one step away?
We try to do things. Is more, we try to involve them into a global project. So they are part of the decision process, and we need to have them on board with us. So when we are educating our young drivers to become professional, we're also educating a little bit the parents' environment, and we are taking them on board, and they must be part of the project. You cannot make decision for a 12, 15 years old kid without having the parents on board and fully aligned with what you are doing with their kids. So it is super important to make sure the parents are happy with the project you are presenting them and what you want to do with their kids.
And if a parent has raced themselves, does that make the job for you easier or harder?
harder, definitely harder, because of course they always refer to their time and when they were doing this or that and their time, but and most of the time they haven't reached the level their kids are reaching, or they even not raced at the level their kids are racing. So it's not always easy, but you have to respect that and you have to take into consideration the passion for the sport they have, and you have to find a way to deal with each of them. And yeah,
I think you're a great diplomat, Gwen. That's what I'm thinking.
We have to.
Now look, there are only 20 seats in Formula One. What do you do when a young driver has climbed the ladder, you've done it together, but there's no seat available at the top echelon? What do you do next?
Well, first, when we sign a driver, we feel the responsibility of delivering a job. It's a life project for these kids. And I feel the responsibility of giving everything I can to help them to perform and to guide them and to bring them to the top. It means that you have also to anticipate what will be the market in 2 years, in 3 years, in 4 years. And do we have, if I sign this driver, is there a slot in 4 years' time in Formula One, a possible slot? Do I have a real chance to bring him to Formula One? Sometime you have a fantastic driver winning in F2, and we have seen that recently, and there is no opportunity in F1. So we try to always anticipate that situation first, and then we have always some options on our list. Of course, reserve, test driver, simulator. But for a young driver, I think important is also to have a possibility in another series, like Endurance or in Japan or in IndyCar. You need to have different options open.
I was going to ask, how important is it that a 20-year-old keeps racing? How long can you keep them on the sidelines?
Well, first, I think if we have an exceptional talent, you have always a possibility in Formula One. I don't think the last 15 years we missed someone exceptional. I think all the exceptional drivers are actually in Formula One. So if you end up in a situation where you have to wait a little bit, you must find them track time, because let's say it's part of the preparation, and you know that, okay, we have to wait maybe 1 year, but next year it will be in. So you have to maintain the training, you have to maintain the racing spirit, you have to maintain everything before to find a solution in Formula One. But it cannot be more than a year, I think.
So let's take Oscar Piastri as an example. I know he's not one of your drivers, but he sat out last year and did some miles in a two-year-old car. And you think that is okay for a year, but had a race seat not become available this year, you, if you were managing him, would have found something for him to race elsewhere.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely, because otherwise you are losing too much by waiting.
And I'm interested that if you have a real talent, you say they normally find their way, as in, even if on paper the seats all look full in Formula One, if you've got the next Lewis or Max, you'll be able to muscle your way in somehow. Is that how it works?
Yeah, and probably because if you are sure of it, you will know it earlier enough to anticipate and to make sure that in 2 years' time it will be there. So what are the possibilities, and can we already find an agreement with a team to put him in Formula One? So that's what we are trying to do. With George, for example, I mean, when we signed him in 2016, he was in Formula 3. And after, let's say, the first year of training, it was not obvious yet. But when he won GP3, the target was to go in Formula 2, and from there I knew that I had to find a possibility in Formula 1. What will be the situation in 2 years, and if George win F2, where I can put him in Formula 1? And we have anticipated all that.
How tough is it for a rookie coming into Formula 1 now? Because there's very little testing. There's huge amount of pressure. Is it much harder for young guys coming in now than it was, say, 15 years ago?
It is more difficult because you have less testing and track time. But on the other hand, I think we are also preparing young drivers more than it was 15 years ago. They are spending a lot of time in the factories. They are interacting with our group of engineers. They are doing a lot of simulator. So they know all the procedures. They know the team. They know they are used to have a technical discussion with our guys, etc., etc. So yes, the track time is less than it was before. So it makes it a little bit more difficult when you have to drive. But in terms of preparation, I think we are preparing them way more than it was a few years ago.
Now, can we talk about women and Formula One? It's a question that I often get, and I'm sure you do as well, but why are there no female drivers in Formula One? What's your take on that?
My personal view is it's mathematic. When you have 100 boys starting in go-kart, you have one girl. So out of this 100 boys, maybe one will make it to Formula One. So if you have just one girl starting in the same time, the chance is zero to make it. So the key right now is to attract much more girls in go-kart than what we have now. At Mercedes, we are lucky to have one young, talented girl called Luna Fluxa. She's racing in go-karts, actually, in junior. And she won in the European Mini Yamaha Championship 2 years ago in front of 90 angry boys. And it took me a year and months to find a girl into our program. So we need to have more girls racing. We need to attract more girls. And there is also a lot of initiatives at the moment to promote girls in motorsport, but also to attract much more girls in go-karts. That is a key.
How do we do that? How do we make the sport more attractive for girls?
Well, first, I think we have to make it more accessible in general. So the financial cost is a key, and I think all the initiatives made by Formula One with the F1 Academy to attract girls into our sport are helping, and you are developing passions, also Netflix, etc. I mean, Formula One is attracting more and more girls, you know. By doing that, we can see that there is more girls coming in go-kart, but we need more and more and more, so we need as much as girls than boys. And that's the only way I think we can find a talented girl and bring her to Formula One.
I mean, recent research by the FIA and Formula One suggests that 40% of the audience now watching Formula One is female. So do you think over time that will start to be reflected in at the grassroots of driving?
Yes, I think we are just at the beginning of the process, and the impact will be seen in 3, 4, 5 years. I think you will see much more girls coming in the international go-kart in the coming years. We just start to see in Mini, for example, the first year that there is a little bit more girls than 5, 6 years ago. So we start to notice the impact, but we need to keep pushing. We need to keep pushing.
Luna is clearly very talented. You've said, you know, how successful she's been already. Is her approach at the age of 12 any different to the approach of a 12-year-old boy?
Absolutely not. She's so determined, same as George was. She's pushing, and she's a little monster when she's wearing her helmet, and she wants just to win and to And when you talk to her, she doesn't want to be considered as a girl. She wants to be considered as a driver. And she's such a character. And yes, she's definitely a part and special as well.
How important are role models for these young drivers in terms of for Luna? How important is someone like Susie Wolf? Equally for a young boy, how much do they look up to George, to Lewis, to Esteban?
Well, they are examples. They are good examples to follow. And George is actually helping me a lot with young drivers because he is an example for all of them. Of course, we have the privilege to have Lewis into our team, who is 7 times world champion. So he was already an example for George to follow. And I hope in the future George will be also an example for the young drivers coming by being world champion.
It's really interesting that you say Lewis was an example for George to follow, because if you look at the history books, it does work like that. When Michael Schumacher started winning in the 90s, there was then a surge in the number of German drivers making it to Formula One. And I think 10, 15 years ago, we had as many as 6 at one time. Equally, there's now a surge in interest from young British drivers because of everyone wanting to be like Lewis, I guess. What do you do in the markets where there isn't a role model, in the US, for example, or China? Or how do we get more people involved in karting in those countries?
Yeah, that is all the discussion we're having right now with the FIA and with some organizers. And that's what I was saying earlier in our discussion, Tom. It's how we make the sport more accessible and how we help people to be in a position to afford a go-kart season. And I think we start now to have more and more US kids, for example, coming in Europe. But it's not easy because we're talking about school. So how you do when you are a young American kid and you have to live in Italy at 12 years old to race in Europe, it's super difficult. So we are trying to answer all that question and to make everything we can to make sure we are attracting the most talented kids around the world.
But how do you encourage a young American driver to want to be the next Lewis Hamilton rather than the next Jeff Gordon in NASCAR, for example?
Yeah, well, yes, I think now we have 3 Grand Prix in the US, and when you see the popularity and how many spectators we are having into those events and how many kids are waiting at the entrance and who knows Lewis, knows George, knows all the drivers, I think they now all want to race in go-karts and they all want to become the next world champion in Formula One or the next F1 driver. And I think the popularity F1 is having again now is helping to attract young talents in go-kart.
It's so great to talk about all these young talents. How interested is Toto Wolff in what's going on the young driver program? And how much does he ask you about the 10-year-olds, the 12-year-olds coming through?
Well, he's very, very, very into it.
And actually, his son has just started racing, yeah, I think, hasn't he?
Yeah. He starts go-kart, yeah. And but Toto, you know, started, he was a racing driver. He was racing himself. Then he was managing young talents in the past. I think that's how he started really in motorsport, by helping young drivers. I remember guys, Alex Prema, or
Lewis's teammate in GP2.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. He was also helping few other drivers, I know. And he has a huge passion for the sport and for the drivers. And he's following everything. Sometimes I'm on a go-kart race and he's texting me or calling me to know what's going on and why Alex didn't win the heat and what happened, etc., etc. So we are interacting a lot, and he's super involved into the young driver program, which is cool.
I'm fascinated to know a little bit about your background now. How did you come to manage young drivers?
Well, I did 9 years go-kart. Well, first...
So you wanted to be a racing driver as well?
Yeah, well, my dad brought me into motorsport, and it started when I was a super young kid. We were watching Formula One Grand Prix on TV, and it was family event at that time. Every Sunday, Grand Prix where it was a family moment. And then I... First time I went on the Formula One Grand Prix, I was 4 years old. It was Dijon, 1979, the famous...
The famous Gilles Villeneuve, yeah, René
Arnoux. Yeah, which I absolutely don't remember. And like, the only thing I remember is I met Jacques Lafitte, and he came to me and he scratched my head and say something like, "Hey, buddy, how are you doing?" And that I still remember. It's funny. And... Few years later, I started in go-kart, and I did 9 years go-kart, and I did a few years in rally. But I understood quickly that if I was staying behind the steering wheel, I would never make one penny in motorsport. So I had to do my army time, and then I started to work. And I met by... I stay with a huge passion for motorsport, and I did some studies in sport, law and economy. A master to sport, law and economy. And I met almost by accident the first driver I worked with. His name was Guillaume Moreau, and he was racing in Formula Renault at that time, and he was looking for some help to find partners and to help him with more or less everything. And that's how everything started in 2004.
And then how do you grow a business like that?
The first year was, I mean, we had zero money, and everything was about racing, and each penny we were finding was going into the racing program. So, but it was a time where I met Fred Vasseur. He was running his Formula 3 team, ASM at that time. I met Eric Boullier, I met Toto Wolff, and all these guys... end up in Formula One, and I was just probably at the right place at the right time, and I have developed this network with them, and we knew each other, and I think they liked the way I was helping my driver. And when the opportunity came, it was with Eric Boullier. He arrived at Renault F1, and he had this young driver program in place, and he called me to ask me what I was thinking about and how we could develop things together. And I joined the Enstone team in 2010.
So which drivers were there in 2010? That was Romain Grosjean?
Yeah, that was Romain Grosjean, Jérôme D'Ambrosio.
How funny. And you're working with Jérôme again now.
Absolutely.
And are you staying in touch with Romain as he...
Yes, I'm actually...
racing an IndyCar?
Yeah, I'm actually... helping him as a friend to deal with his contract and advise for IndyCar. And it's nice to see him enjoying again, you know, racing and fighting for pole and being angry because he missed the pole position for 1/10 or whatever. And he's again, you know, on top of his game. So it's really nice to see him.
How does your own experience of driving help with your interactions with the young guys and girls?
Zero, because I was never racing at the level my drivers are racing. So it doesn't help me, and I'm not acting as a driver coach, and I'm never going to tell them how to drive. It would be not appropriate. But it's more about how to understand the motorsport world and what is important, etc., etc. But I don't think that really helped me, because I was first, apart maybe for go-kart, but I was more doing rally. So, and it's different world. It's like rugby and football. You have a ball, you have a playground, but it's two different sports. So it never helped me.
It's just the same mentality, being able to understand. You know what oversteer feels like. You know what understeer feels like.
Yeah, but they are working with engineers, and they are... super talented, so it would be not appropriate coming from me who has never achieved anything. I mean, I have done it as a complete amateur, and here we're in a professional world, so it's, yeah, two different stuff.
Well, look, Gwen, it's been wonderful to talk to you. Let's end it just by talking about the current crew on the Mercedes Young Driver program. You've got seven drivers. For the listeners, who do they want to watch out for?
Well, we have Frederic Vesti, who is racing in Formula 2. We have Paul Aron in Formula 3. We have Andrea Kimi Antonelli racing in Formula Regional, who is actually the first one we have signed in go-kart into the Mercedes program. We have Alex Powell, the Jamaican Rocket, and who is doing amazing actually in go-kart. We have Yuan Pukui, a Chinese driver, probably the most talented Chinese at the moment, kid coming from China, yeah, also in go-kart. And we have Luna Fluxar. And we have Kenzo Krigi, a young British kid also racing in the UK in go-kart.
And the goal with all of those people is Formula One?
I wish. And it would be a dream. But we have to be realistic. My target is to make them all professional. That would be already something good. And I wish few of them will reach Formula One.
Gwen, best of luck with them. Thank you very much for your time. It's been great to chat.
Thanks to you, Tom.
Wasn't that a fascinating insight into how the future stars of Formula One are found? I'll share my thoughts on that a little bit later. But first, here's Mercedes team principal Toto Wolff discussing the team's young driver program.
Mercedes always supported young driver. When you look back in the glory days of Schumacher and Wendlinger, Kreuzbeutner and Frentzen, these names will not ring a lot, will not say a lot to new fans. But that was a junior program where Schumacher is a good example. Eventually, he ended up in Formula One, very successful. He drove our sports cars. And since then, we tried to keep it up. And over the many years, we've always had junior drivers that eventually made it into professional motor racers. And the latest examples are George and Valtteri and Esteban Ocon. And therefore, we are trying to home grow young talent. And whilst not always racing for us at the end, we are proud to have them.
How often do drivers of Formula One caliber come along?
For me, it's in a way cyclical. We see spells where you suddenly have a handful that end up in Formula One, and then for many years there's nothing, and then every 10 years you have a great one that's growing into Formula One. That's kind of the cycle that I have seen. I think it's when karting is competitive within a certain age group, they push each other. And when you look at Leclerc and Gasly, Ocon, they have competed against each other on national level, and then add to the equation Lando Norris, Max Verstappen, Albon, Leclerc and George Russell. It's pretty much more than 50% of the grid, and they are all within 2 years of age. And that was a very strong generation. And then in between you see less competitive, and then they come in bundles again in a way.
Toto, what do you look for in a young driver?
Speed. Speed, speed, speed. And that means how quickly can you actually pull out of a lap? How adaptable are you? But everything you can learn, but you haven't had the talent and the nurture that is needed to have all that, you're going to fail to go to the very top echelon of Formula One. And obviously character and personality are important, but if the parents have those values and transcend them to the children, they stay humble whilst hungry, I think we can form them too and pretty much take over when they are teenagers together with the parents. And I think that combination is crucial for me.
How obvious is this speed you're talking about when you're looking at a 10-year-old, an 8-year-old?
I think Gwen and his team, they've been around for a long time, and you can see that. There is kids that already in the very junior classes at the age of 10, you can see how they handle the kart, how they take the pressure. You can see talent shining through, and if you add the nurture to that, they can be really competitive.
Do the good drivers always make it to Formula One?
No, I think Michael Schumacher said it once, there might be a bus driver out there that is more talented and quicker than he would have been. And I think take the population of Montreal, where we are at the moment, I guess there's 1,000 people that would make pretty good racing drivers, but they just had never had the opportunity.
Can you think of someone who didn't make it to F1 who deserved to be there? Can you give us a name?
No, I can. I've seen, and I don't want to give you names because I think it would be unfair. I've seen young drivers with tremendous talent that have failed because they either didn't have the education nor the right role models in parents, or simply lacked intellect or social intelligence. They just failed. They thought it is not important. It's just important to have speed. And eventually they didn't build the networks that were needed, and they didn't act in the way that was, you know, that brought them the right support.
But it's interesting. So it's not just speed, speed, speed.
Speed is the fundamental basis. But what I'm saying is there are people that had speed but failed eventually because of the lack of personality, integrity, honesty, loyalty. But it doesn't go without speed. The nice guy with all those great character traits which would make him a good friend, a successful entrepreneur, manager, can't make it if he hasn't got the talent.
Have you got any regrets, any future champions that you could have signed but didn't?
I never have regrets because everything happens for a reason. Sometimes there were great drivers coming along and we didn't have space for them. And at other times, they just needed to take a different trajectory. But I think what we have today with our drivers, and when I look at the junior categories, I'm really happy. I love seeing Kimi grow through the ranks and Alex Powell. I enjoy seeing Luna's success. And there's a few others that are part of our junior program that can be a generation that can be eventually very successful in Formula One.
It's interesting to hear you talking about, you know, you love seeing these guys and girls coming through. How involved are you personally in their progression?
So Gwen runs the program with Stefan and he's in their team. They're at most of the kart races. They nurture them. When you look at Gwen was fundamental for Esteban's development and very closely involved to George Russell's career as well at a certain stage. And we talk. They present to me where they think a driver can make it in the academy. We talk about the business models, how much money is needed, if any. And they place them in the right teams. And I'm just giving, you know, just giving my final thumbs up or thumbs down, but I empower Gwen very much to take these decisions.
Could you have bought Max?
No, I don't want to talk about buying Max, first of all, because that was the wrong terminology. No, they just, Max was very good in karting, was good in F3, and it was clear that there's a big one that's growing. And we talked to them in the initial phases, and was a nice discussion with yours and with Max involved as well. But it was clear that we couldn't give him a seat because we had Nico and we had Lewis and we offered the support in F2. But since Red Bull was able to offer them the AlphaTauri seat or Toro Rosso back in the day, it got Max into the seat.
Had you known when you were having those discussions that Nico Rosberg was going to retire at the end of 2016, do you think Max might have made a different decision?
Well, maybe, but you know, if I would know where the stock market is next year, I would decide to invest in it or not. So yeah, we would be very happy and rich people if we would know what happens 12 months on.
Final topic is just female drivers. Research by the FIA and Formula One has revealed that 40% of Formula One's audience is female. When will that be reflected in the number of girls entering karting?
When you look at the grid today in karting, or for 1,000 boys, you will probably have 20 girls. And it's just not a meaningful number. And I think what F1 has launched, managed by Susie, the F1 Academy, has exactly that target. To at the very grassroots in karting and then through Formula One Academy racing cars, to build the next generation of female drivers, but not, let's say, quota girls or just grid fillers, but really find a woman that can race in Formula One in a competitive car successfully. That's the aim. And Susie has set herself those targets that within the next few years to identify that girl or that woman, and you know, hopefully in 5 years and or a bit more, to have a girl or more on merit in Formula One racing for podiums or victories.
Can we talk about Luna Fluxer, who's on your program? Do you look at her and see her in any way different to the boys of the same age karting?
Of course, I look in a different way. Luna is the first girl who is really capable of racing in the top field of her karting class and has the talent and the background to become very successful as a racing driver. Having said that, if she would a boy, she would be a boy at that stage, you would expect her to win and win championships. But I think we need to take it from there and say she has all the ingredients to be successful. Her parents have done a good job, and now it's up to us to continue to nurture her, teach her, and that's Gwen and Stefano who are doing all of that, and eventually make her ready for Formula Cars.
Thanks for your time, Toto and Gwen, and I hope you at home enjoyed these conversations, because the job that Mercedes do is vital to the continued development of tomorrow's F1 stars, and I feel that we now understand a little more about how the system works. I'm excited to see which Mercedes young stars make it to F1, but there's a real sense of responsibility from Gwen and his team. To give their seven young pups careers as professional racing drivers is job number one. Then, if the stars align and they make it to F1, that's the icing on the cake. And as Gwen says, all the exceptional drivers have made it to F1. Good luck with the programme, Gwen, and I'll see you at a racetrack again soon. So what did you make of what Gwen and Toto had to say? Are you someone who might have made it had you had their backing? Let me know your thoughts about everything we've discussed on the show, and I'll read out some of your comments at the end of next week's episode. Please contact me via all the usual means. I'm at TomClarksonF1 on Twitter, or you can use the hashtag F1BeyondTheGrid. Which brings me on to what you sent in about last week's guest, Nico Hülkenberg. I thought Nico was in cracking form, and so did you, judging by your comments. Let's start with this from KJS. Hi Tom, I really enjoyed the podcast with Nico Hülkenberg. My then 13-year-old son and I had the honour of meeting Nico in Sydney during his A1 GP days. And he was so generous with his time and so down to earth. He's a great guy, and I hope he stays in Formula One for many years to come. Well, thanks for the note. That's a lovely story. Nico is definitely one of the drivers who makes time for people, and even more since he came back to Formula One full-time with Haas. And what about this from NavF1? Nico might genuinely be one of the best drivers never to have experienced a top seat. It would have been nice to see him at Red Bull for a season. Now there's a thought, Nav. Interestingly, Nico is quite matey with Max Verstappen. He often flies to races in Max's plane. But unfortunately, I'm not sure there's any more to it than that. Convenience. And finally, what about this from Joseph Hines? I really want Haas to make a step forward. Nico has been a great acquisition, and I can't wait to see their B-spec car in Austin in October. They truly need something positive out of this season. Well, wouldn't it be great if Haas were able to challenge for points regularly in the last five races of 2023? Watch this space. Look, we're going to leave it there for messages this week, but thank you to everyone who wrote in about the Hulk. We read everything and we love what you have to say. And thanks very much for listening. I'll be back next week with another great guest who happens to be one of the most ferociously competitive people I've ever met. F1 Beyond the Grid is produced by Formula One and Audioboom Studios. Until next time, keep it flat out.